Welcome to 2-Bit Encryption, the officially unofficial podcast for Mr. Robot on USA. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're doing a Season 2 preview. We, I think you and I both just binged all of Season 1 again.
Yes.
I missed chunks here and there. You know, I did it over the course of a single day, so I was doing other things from time to time. But
power through there.
Yeah, I had to do it.
What? Let's talk about our name first, 2-Bit Encryption.
Okay.
Because it implies something of a shoddy product.
Right.
And if people... Yeah. Mostly I'm saying this because I don't want 100 emails saying 2-bit encryption's terrible. We know.
2-bit
encryption
is
like when we were brainstorming ideas, and when one of us came up with that, we just both burst out laughing because it's ridiculous. And like, you know, 2-bit podcasts, like it everything sounds chintzy about it. But
yeah,
we hope that we're more robust, more like a 256-bit encryption.
I'd settle for 128, you know, maybe even a nice Caesar cipher. I don't know.
Rot 13. Or nothing. If it's good enough for my diary, it's good enough for all my financial data on the internet. So we got that out of the way. Welcome to the podcast.
Right.
What was
the
your...
other thing? Maybe before we get too much into Season 1, we should talk about our backgrounds in science and stuff.
Okay.
Because, like, you know, watching this show, there's a lot of stuff that they get into about hacking and technology and servers and all that kind of stuff that made a lot of sense to me.
Yes.
And felt very realistic, and which is one of the reasons I liked it so much. Given my background, I knew a lot about that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how that hits people who don't.
Right.
But I, you know, I'm a web developer. I have done some server administration stuff. And, you know, as a curious teenager on the internet in the 90s, of course I looked up, what's hacking all about?
Sure.
You know?
Found
a lot of those DDoS
war dialing.
In
the glory days.
Yeah.
When you could just pick up a headset and whistle at it and you're calling long distance to China.
Right, for free. So that's my background. I definitely looked into all this stuff when I was a teenager.
So I've got a similar background in web development and just client server development and architecture. But I've also, I spent a couple years doing security work as well, because one of the hats I wore when I worked for a retail company was the PCI DSS compliance, which is all about the payment card industry.
Protection of people's data.
Right, and it was all about, you know, so, you know, not just hardening your attacks from a technical standpoint, but training your staff. You know, your weakest point's always the cashiers. It was every other week occurrence, it seemed like, that the big scam when I was doing, not only was it just the phishing devices, where you'd actually have the external device that was covering the real device, would read the strips, and they were getting really sophisticated about 5 years ago when I was doing this, where they were having like cell phone interfaces, so you didn't have to, once you physically compromised the pump,
you never had to go back,
which is how they usually got, and you had to rely on your maintenance guys, and when cashiers were changing the, like, you know, the receipt tape and the gas pumps to, like, do a physical inspection to protect you from that. But also, like, it's surprising how, you know, like, these Western Union guys, gang, would call and claim to be from Western Union and say, we need you to go to the terminal, input these diagnosis codes, which are essentially bank numbers and amounts, and they would just, like, take out the max you could from the store, and the cashier would just be okay, and then you'd train them and, like, you know, don't do this. No one from Western Union is ever going to call and, like, make that a day one thing. And then you'd have, I remember one memorable weekend where a store manager got all huffy with the guy and's like, well, unless I hear from RCOO blank blank, I'm not authorizing anything. Well, within minutes, guess what? The CEO blank blank started calling and authorizing these transactions. And it's like, oh my God, the social engineering and hacking, seeing it in real life and realizing how easy it is to compromise the average person that's getting minimum wage plus a buck or two, that doesn't really give a shit in the first place. It's an eye opener.
And how, you know, insidious a small piece of information can be, like the name of a CEO, the name of a department.
Yes.
In your organization, like that kind of social engineering stuff. I used to read 2600 a lot, and that was one of the big things that, like, Kevin Mitnick did. Like, people praise Kevin Mitnick, who was kind of just a very notable hacker in the 90s, got hunted by the FBI for a very long time, eventually went to prison. Most of the hacking that he did was social engineering.
Indeed. Because it's so much easier.
It is so much easier. I mean, technically, you can harden a system to where it's very difficult to get in.
Right.
Now, not impossible,
but people always have to...
But people are the weak link in the system, yeah. And that's the thing that I think the show does really well, is it mixes, you know, the technical and also the social engineering aspects of hacking in a way that feels totally real to me.
I mean, I think, so that's the thing, like, there are limits, like, I feel like, especially when you get to the outer edges of the F-Security plot, the fact that they're encrypting all the world's financial data and all their backups, right. And it's like, where I'm like, man, that really strains my suspension of disbelief, but...
It's technically possible.
Yeah,
I'm
essentially the lawyer that's watching Better Call Saul. I'm the surgeon who's watching ER.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
There, you can do your due diligence, but there's a couple points where, you know, they stretch what's the realm of possible. Even the premise, like E-Corp, is this bastard conglomeration of like Microsoft and Dow Chemical and Monsanto and insurance company and. The Enron, like it's like this, just everything. They do everything.
Yeah,
and they have their finger in every pie. And
company is a lot like that in the world, the real world. I mean, like apparently Vivendi is into like all sorts of stuff other than just being like a gaming company,
right? But
and
they
owning
own
other gaming companies, they own like food and telecommunications.
You certainly have multinational conglomerates, but the fact that you'd have one that's like this, I feel like this is a bit where. It's almost like I stop seeing the real world and start seeing a bit more of a dystopia. Which
right, like if you like, they're combining like B of A and Chase more like all of those companies into one.
Uh-huh.
Because like in reality, if you took down B of A, well, the other banks would just continue to operate.
Right,
but here they need that as a plot device.
So that's the thing. Is like I feel like I was initially really impressed with the technical realism of the show. Unlike, not like it's super realistic, but like when you consider season 2 House of Cards and their hackers sending 3D fish things on iPads, and like it's just ridiculous. Whereas this, it's like this guy's, he's opening up a terminal and you got a shell prompt
and he's using a pseudo command or a chmod, like
all the
commands actually seem to do what they want them to do.
Right A lot of hacking done in directory lists and cmod and stuff like that, but or chmod, how do you pronounce that?
I'd say chmod, but that's cumbersome. It was interesting because I was watching it with my girlfriend, and she isn't technically inclined the way that I am. So, like, it was interesting to hear her say, "Oh yeah, I get what's happening," because they do just enough like minimal graphic stuff, like during that DDoS attack.
And Elliot's narration helps too.
It does a lot.
He's
explaining.
Doing.
Yeah. Oh, if it gets to this server, they're all going to be infected again, and we need to reroute traffic around it. And then they have the flashing graphics that help. So they do just enough without kind of going into, 1990s hackers, like the movie territory.
Right.
Where shit's spinning around in 3D and you're flying through.
Right. That's dumb.
Digital towers.
That's like, the stuff I don't. Like that, that is,
it's cool looking, but it's not realistic at all.
Right.
So I'm happy to see that this show does just enough to explain to a layperson what is going on without... ruining it for people who know what is actually happening.
Can we talk about a relationship with the show a bit? Because I'm curious.
Okay.
I don't know this about you. I know that I got into this show around episode 3 or 4 because I was coming off of Game of Thrones, and I think it was either already going or maybe I was on to, or something was preventing me from picking it up. Plus, it's a USA Network show.
Right. Nobody expected this to be amazing.
Like, what is this? Some kind of CSI hacker version, but... the people I was gaming with were consistently talking about it, and I was somewhat spoiled because no one actually came out and told me things, but the way they were doing the speculation I was primed that there was like a big twist. Now, I remember watching the show thinking it was fairly obvious fairly early on that Mr. Robot and Elliot was one and the same person. Like... Several episodes before the actual reveal. And even, like, I felt like they revealed it, and then the episode later he says, "I'm Mr. Robot." Like, wow. Thanks for catching up with us there, Elliot. but I don't know. Like, again, what did you think? Because you watched it. I can't remember if you watched the whole thing after it was released.
I did, I binge-watched it after it was released. I don't remember feeling like, oh, these guys are the same person. But after they reveal that, I was like, oh, his dad's totally dead. Like, he's not around, actually.
Yeah.
That was fairly obvious to me. But they revealed that within the span of another episode.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have much time to revel in my predictions there.
Right.
But
also, so I thought the first half and the first two-thirds of the season were incredible, like the whole caper build-up.
Yeah.
I kind of felt like the show fell off in the last three episodes. It felt kind of anticlimactic.
Really? I thought it sagged in the middle.
I'm Mr. Robot, and I'm also Elliot, and oh, Darlene's my sister, and, and like, we've done this thing, and it's this worldwide financial meltdown, and it kind of ends right there in the middle of things. But
so that's the interesting thing. They said, like, Sam Esmail, I think is how you say it, he was saying, look, this is just a prologue to the show that I really want to go for here.
Yeah, it's so go ahead.
So I can see why, like, you might think it's anticlimactic, because he's just setting up the board.
Right.
But I didn't really feel like it was anticlimactic. I mean, the hack goes off like you want it to. The world's in chaos. I thought there was a lot of climax there. I thought it kind of really sagged in the middle for me when, you know, they had this plan to get into Steel Mountain, and they were like, oh shit, White Rose, and what is the name of that, of the Chinese hacking organization?
Shit.
Starts with a D. I don't know.
I just looked it up. Death Squad.
not Death Squad.
Right.
Right. Brian Redband's behind all of it. No, it's sad.
Dark when, Army.
Dark Army. Dark so, Army. Yeah, right. It's a paintball arena. So it's
and Indianapolis' premier haunted house location. Don't forget
that's
that.
True.
It becomes Necropolis in the month of October.
Sure does. So for me, it sagged once that plot got put on the back burner and they started doing this drug stuff with Shayla and the murder plot with her and this
you
guy
didn't
in
like
prison.
That?
I liked it, but it wasn't what I wanted out of the show.
Oh,
I guess.
Man.
Like, for me, the interesting parts were the plan, the hack. Like, it became a different show at that point.
Right.
For like four episodes. And then it went back, oh, Dark Army's back on. We're going to meet with White Rose.
It was a little bit.
Now it's interesting again.
I don't know. It felt a little bit like 24 in that respect. Like, you know, you've got the main plot, but every once in a while you'll get into some kind of side thing that and those can go one of two ways. Like, you can have Keith or Sutherland doing something badass, or you can have Kim running from a mountain lion. But I thought the dealing with Kayla, right?
Shayla?
Kayla.
I think it's Shayla.
Okay.
Yeah, it's Shayla.
So dealing with the whole thing with Shayla, I thought was interesting because it was the first time that I thought that Elliot kind of had to be completely pulled out of his comfort zone and there was actual real stakes because everything else was kind of intellectual. Like,
okay.
We're going to hijack the world's financial data. And
but nothing had actually happened yet on
that
front.
Yeah, these were like the fact that your hacking can have real consequences and can get people hurt. And also the fact that, you know, she gave him clear instructions on like, hey, before, like, it was always presented to his hacktivism was a good thing. Like, oh, he shut down a coffee-peddling pedophile.
Right.
And, you know, he's put a drug dealer away. It was abusing the woman that he cared about. Mm-hmm. And she tells him, like, you know, look, I don't want you to set up any revenge. I don't want you to make this right. And he did it anyway, and she died because of it.
Yeah.
Which I thought is an important lesson for him to learn. Like, that, you know, this isn't all just fun and games, and you're not always going to win.
Yeah, and
without that story, I don't know that you have that aspect of his kind of self-doubt and I caused this. And then you had the flashback episode that showed that he'd fucked her from the beginning.
Yeah.
Like, it was his crazy request to have his, like, responsible heroin use or morphine use that got her involved with this psycho in the first place.
So he in effect killed her.
And how much kind of, I guess, you know, I know it's a false dichotomy to like, oh, this girl looks wholesome and healthy, and now she's kind of gaunt and gothy, and, you know, she's having a bad time. But I think you're supposed to read that she was a much healthier individual before.
I think so.
They had formed a relationship, which I thought that was all, I mean, you're right. It didn't move the main plot along, but it did a lot to kind of humanize or, you know, bring Elliot down a couple pegs.
It did. I guess I was just so gung-ho about this hacking plan, the Steel Mountain thing, that I really wanted to see it. And when they just put it on the back burner,
you compromise
for four episodes,
a system, you compromise a company's air conditioner.
Yeah.
And you got the whole thing blown wide
open.
You
smelt their tapes at 95 degrees. I don't know if that's real. I don't know what those tapes can withstand, but who knows? They probably did some research on that and said, yeah, tapes melt at 95 degrees.
I also thought, so
here's
so,
the other thing. You mentioned that first scene with the child porn ring that he brings down.
Right.
I thought that was super important to making Elliot look like a good guy, because
you're right. The rest of the series makes him look like a complete nut job that's hard
right?
to relate to.
Sociopath, psychopath, just general asshole to a lot of his friends and coworkers.
And in a calculated way. Like, he's not doing these out of thing. He's not doing things because
he's not oblivious.
He's caught up in the emotion and he's like lashing out. He's
right.
Well, I don't know. That might be a complicated thing to unpack.
But he's not oblivious. I mean, he understands what he's doing.
It's opposite of oblivious. Yeah. He's like, I need to do this to elicit this reaction so I can get further. I get what I want out of life.
Yeah, he's a real dirtbag most of the time.
Yeah.
So to start off with such a big thing that he's doing right mm-hmm. for the world, I feel like without that, you kind of have a different opinion of Elliot.
Do you think that the thing that... So I remember... You know, we talked about Fight Club when we did the review of the Fight Club
movie. How could you not? Yeah.
And we talked a lot about just the philosophy, like, that I think that in Fight Club, you're supposed to kind of recoil from the Tyler Durden's philosophy and see it as ultimately kind of self-destructive and shallow and uninformed and ignorant. And yet you also have this huge class of people, you know, usually young, angry males.
Yeah, which I was when I watched it.
That, you
They're
know,
like right on.
The quote Tyler Durden for truth,
yeah,
so to say. And I feel like I've seen a lot of that in Mr. Robot, too, where people are not getting how, like, really shitty his worldview is.
Some of it.
I agree
with some of his,
sure,
his points.
He says, I mean, the point where he starts, like, sermonizing about stuff and, you know, connections to people, like, a lot of that does ring true. And, you know, how, like, the world celebrates phonies and frauds and corrupt individuals and, you know, they show up Tom Brady and that made me laugh. But I do feel like there's a lot here that they're talking about relationships with people that is going to appeal to a certain type of person.
Yeah.
And they're going to take that as like, oh, well, this is a validation of the way, and where it's really more of a cautionary tale.
Sure.
Like,
I mean, in the end, he doesn't want to go through with it, right? Like, this hack, he kind of comes around to, sure, one side of him, the side that I would say... is more close to Elliot's personality.
Well, so we're going to talk eventually about theories. The ones that I really liked, a piece of analysis, that is, this is an anti-Fight Club. In Fight Club, Edward Norton's character created a darker persona for him to live out his fantasies and his dreams and, you know, to inflict these things upon reality.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are saying Mr. Robot's the opposite. Like... The Mr. Robot character, the malicious guy that's quick to pull a gun and threaten people and is angry and just wants anarchy, is the real Elliot. And Elliot has recently created the mild-mannered version, or he created a mild-mannered version of himself to, even from a very early age. Like, that's one of the hints we're supposed to get when you see his father in the shop and he steals the money and his dad says, well, you did a bad thing, but you're a good kid. We're supposed to understand that's Elliot's first... attempt at social engineering. Like,
okay.
He presents this mild-mannered, you know, facade hide his more nefarious things, to the extent that it's now bifurcated. And there's a lot of other, like, the
well,
visions.
I guess that's why those scenes with his father, you know, his actual father, not Mr. Robot.
Yeah, yeah.
Those scenes make me think that Elliot as a character is closer to the real Elliot than... Mr. Robot is to the real Elliot.
But there's so many things we don't know. Like, we just...
I know.
Like,
yeah,
5 minutes
you
before we recorded,
anything.
Where I said, why the hell is he in court-ordered therapy?
And the correct answer was, I don't know.
Yes.
Because the show doesn't tell you.
The show doesn't tell you, but it's like, that's illustrated. Now, it turns out that on USA's Mr. Robot website, there's a biography for all the characters, and it says for financial hacking-related crimes,
you could kind of assume.
Right, but she also says stuff about his violent outbursts, and I'm like, is there something darker? Like, did he beat up an ex-girlfriend, or did he assault a family member, or like a boss, or... But he got convicted of these financial crimes, but that's not in the show, and we know so little about him. And I was getting to this point where in one of his heroin vision or morphine visions or whatever, Angela tells him, you know, you are not Elliot, and you were born a month ago.
Young Angela or Angela eating QWERTY, eating a fish? I can't remember which one it is, but I know the vision you're talking about.
But she says, you're not Elliot, and you were born a month ago.
Yeah.
Now, there's a couple ways you can read that. He stopped taking his meds a month ago. Also, that this version of Elliot, who's this mild-mannered, the one who doesn't want to do these things, is a recent manifestation of his psyche.
Right.
I think that stuff is fascinating. I think that's the best part of the show, the reality bending, like what's real, what's not, the fact that we have an unreliable narrator that's talking to us as the audience.
Yep.
And almost
I love that about the end of season one,
like I started thinking when on my rewatch, is like, are we going to get to like, you know, a Tinkerbell clap your hands type of situation when he's asking the audience like, help, I need help. Can you save me? Or is there going to be some kind of weird ARG that somehow influences the plot? Like, is it where is he going?
Like American, like the... Like, people are going to text in and vote on what Elliot does next, or what?
I think that would be kind of a cool idea.
It'd be so hard to have a narrative-driven show like that.
Well, there's two ways to do it. You can do the Telltale way, where you make a choice, and the choice doesn't really matter.
Ultimately, yeah.
It's just gloss. Or they could, you know, it'd be kind of...
But then how satisfying is that?
You could have also two different ways, like, you know, ultimately choose whether Elliot's going to have a happy outcome or a bad outcome, and that happens in season two, and it deploys in season three, and maybe Sam Ismail's like, hey, I could tell either story. Uh-huh. I think each one, and that's the thing, like, everything's so fluid with Elliot that you really could, even far along in the plot, plausibly introduce things that would radically change the trajectory of his character.
Yeah, so I want to talk a little more.
And I'm not saying I want to see that, because that does feel a little gimmicky, but when he's like, you know, please, he's addressing me as the audience and asking for help, I'm like, wow, how far could they take that kind of immersion?
Right, yeah. That was one of the really satisfying things about season one, aside from just the realism and hacking. It was the way that he kind of... We were a character in the show. We were another manifestation of his imagination or his psychosis.
It's the viewer is definitely a character in the show.
Right. And he talks to us, and he kind of says the things that we're thinking at times. Like, oh, I know what you're thinking. I'm full on crazy. Yeah. Yeah. No, you're definitely crazy, dude. That was one of the really cool things. Another thing that I really enjoyed about season one is the shot composition. Like, made it feel very, like, it made you feel uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not the typical, like, oh, people talking across a frame from left to right, and, like, things that move into the past or the future or have a future move in this certain way. It's just like, we're going to change up the rules about shot composition, and we're going to do it in a way that feels right for the show.
But it's backwards of, like, you know, when they're shooting a person talking, it's, you know, their back of their head is dominating the frame instead of
right, and they're looking out the left side of the frame instead of the right.
Exactly.
It's just playing enough with the shot composition that it makes you feel strange.
Yeah.
And you don't really know why unless you go back and say, oh, okay, this is why this shot was not what I expected.
And the other thing about, like, you know, playing against expectations on USA, you have a certain... thought in mind about a USA Network aesthetic.
Sure.
And then they are bringing, like, a premium cable drama quality to this. Like, there's nothing that says this is chintzy or crappy or...
No, not at all.
You know, and I was thinking, like, man,
and
I wonder...
And the score, too. The score is fantastic.
Score's good.
I love that kind of, you know, building synth vibe they've got going.
Well, it's funny because we talked a lot about this on the Leftovers, but, you know, the Where's My Mind...
Right.
Fight Club reference that Leftovers did. And it's funny because Mr. Robot did it first.
Yeah.
But I feel like Leftovers ended up doing it definitively.
Yeah, I would say so. It was the year of the Pixies for sure. Sure. I mean, like, that song was everywhere, especially because we reviewed Fight Club last year. It's just right. All
yeah,
over the
no
place.
Kidding. We got it like double, triple barrel, man.
Yeah.
The other thing I really appreciated that was I found the rewatch surprisingly rewarding because I walked away from my first season thinking this is a great show, but I'm not so sure about some of the late season revelations and how well they track through. And I think Tyrell Wellick is a train wreck.
Right. Yeah, you hated him. I remember that.
Well, you're supposed to. Like, he is
sure, but
he's
you
literally
hated
the
his
worst.
Story arc. You just didn't like anything about that character or
well,
the arc
yeah,
or anything.
I want to get there eventually, okay. But I'm not ready to. I thought it was super interesting to rewatch the show with the full knowledge that Mr. Robot is Elliot.
Yeah.
Because I thought Christian Slater did a pretty good job of aping some of, is Malik?
Yeah, Rami or Rami, I don't know how to say his first name, Malik.
He did a lot of his Mr. Robot quirks when Mr. Robot is when Elliot's trying, because Elliot can be charming and engaging when he puts, it's like he's putting on a mask, an F Society mask to do it. And it's somehow like Christian Slater was suggesting that, especially I noticed when he was threatening one of the F Society members, the guy who just wanted to grow super pot strain.
Or he implanted it into wheat, and he was like...
It was something.
Yeah.
It was some kind of crazy hacker marijuana plot.
Right.
But he... I thought when he was pulling... Like, the way he was holding his head and his body language was intentionally suggesting that this is, you know, this is still Elliot. And that tracks through really cleanly.
Yeah.
I still don't know what to think about Darlene, because I felt that... That was a shocking revelation when it happened. Mm-hmm. But second, when I was rewatching it, I was looking like, okay, are they playing straight with this? And I thought that their relationship was a little bit more flirty. Now, again, Elliot's an unreliable narrator.
Right.
So, like, we could, anything that was flirty or suggestive, it could have been him reading into it, not knowing that she was his sister.
Right.
But I thought that they didn't necessarily play straight with that. And again, I don't have a sister that I'm the same age with. Like, my sister's 7 years younger than me.
Yeah.
So all I have is that relationship and, like, you know, my friend's sisters and how they... I just never was that physically close and, you know, touchy-feely and kind of, I guess, flirty or playful with my sister.
Okay, so I don't have a sister at all. Let me preface it with that.
You did dress your younger brother
a few times
with lipstick and, you know, just tried it out.
Right, but that was more as a fuck you than anything. No, so I don't have any kind of, you know, childhood experience with sisters, but the show is definitely going there. Like, at some point, you know, at the end, the whole thing, the thing that breaks it wide open is he kisses her, right? So, like, obviously, Rami,
Elliot.
Let's call him Elliot.
Yeah.
I don't want to say that Rami's kissing his sister here. Obviously, Elliot is sensing that from her. And I think you're right to point out that that may just be all in his head, and it probably is, in fact, because of the way she reacts to an actual kiss.
Is Darlene his sister?
I think yes. I think if you want to pull the wool over my eyes again and say that her reaction was some manifestation of his psychosis...
Well, because there's only one photograph of her with Christian Slater.
Okay, I guess mean by sister, then.
Well, what I'm saying is, like, so there's a couple possibilities. Is she his biological sister? Because there aren't very many pictures of the whole family together. When he hallucinates his family in Times Square, she's notably absent.
Yeah.
Is she, like, a foster parent that, or a foster or stepsister that she had when he, I'm assuming at some point he was institutionalized? When his dad died? Or his dad died when he's...
Could be.
When he's a young... I mean, I don't... The timeline's really fuzzy for me, honestly.
I know he and Angela bonded, and I don't know that Angela has ever been through foster care or anything crazy.
No, but she did lose her...
She lost her mom, yeah.
Mom, yeah.
Right, and that's what they bonded over. That's why they became friends.
Exactly.
So I don't know if he spent any time in... You know, child psychology or anything like that.
I don't know when his dad died, because at some point it makes it seem like he died as when he was a young adult.
Yeah, so
and that led him on to his social, like, that was his first kind of hacktivism.
I get the impression it's when he was young, because, like, in that scene,
but like
where
young
he's
adult
at,
or like
no, like
teenager.
A kid, like a teenager, because, like, in that scene where they're in the computer shop and he steals the 20 from that guy, whatever. His dad's coughing.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
And it's there to imply, oh, his dad's real sick and he doesn't quite know it yet, but he's about to find out.
So there you go. If his dad died when he's 16, his mom's already out of the picture, then he is going to be put in some kind of foster system. Well, I mean, I guess he could go to another family member.
You see his mom being pretty abusive toward him, right? Like, mm-hmm. I think that his dad died when he was younger than that. Like, 12, 13.
Okay.
I think his dad is about to find out, oh, the diagnosis is real bad and you're dead within the next year, Walter White style, right? So, because all of those
scenes... I thought his mom died before his dad, though. No?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you for sure, but, like, I got the impression that all of that abuse that his mom heaped upon him was partially due to the stress she was dealing with his dad being dead and raising a single child. Like,
okay.
I thought all of that was tied together, but maybe not.
So there's a couple scenes where I think maybe Darlene is either an agent of the White Rose or Tyrell Willick. Because at one point, Tyrell meets with Mr. Robot, right?
With Christian Slater. Yes, in a car, sure.
And he says, I know your dirty little secret, implying that Tyrell knows about his mental illness, and that's something you could do to fuck with somebody, like, you know, put someone on the inside and encourage an attraction, and then tell them you're a sister. I mean, this is all wild, crazy conspiracy theory stuff, but that's what this show encourages.
I thought that was him saying, I know about F-Society. I know you started F-Society, and this is what your plan is. And then later on, it makes sense when he's like, he comes to him and wants in on the thing.
Okay. All right. That also makes sense.
That was my reading. Can we go back to, like, Darlene for a second? Because I think, like, going through on a second watch, it makes, like, so much of the stuff in retrospect makes more sense. Like,
you know what? There's no way that she has to be – she can't be just a plant because she also knows Angela –
She does, yeah.
So that would be, that was a conversation they had. You know, Elliot wasn't in the room.
Yeah,
when they're doing their ballet.
No unreliable narrator. Okay.
So I don't think that theory tracks.
Unless Elliot is also Darlene.
That's just probably me just trying to explain my weird, you know, the weirdness I felt about watching them supposedly be, you know, brother and sister. It's same way as like going back and watching A New Hope when you know Luke and Leia. It's like what the fuck?
It's a little squeaky too.
Yeah.
But it makes a lot more sense, like, why she's so cavalier about breaking into his house and all of this stuff. They're comfortable around each other because they're brother and sister, right?
Like, right.
He doesn't know that, so he's weirded out by this girl who's just way more embedded in his life than he ever wanted her to be and just doesn't give a fuck about that. It makes a lot of sense. And I do like when we go back and watch the Christian Slater stuff, knowing that Mr. Robot is Elliot, there's a lot of scenes like when he first goes to the F-Society headquarters and they're kind of – Christian Slater is doing the talking, but Elliot's standing behind him.
Yes, so the sight lines match up.
And people are looking at Christian Slater, but you know that they're actually looking through him at Rami, who's talking.
All the sight lines match up at all times.
And when Christian Slater kind of comes forward and starts talking about the plan and getting involved in the discussion, Elliot – sits it out, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they're never kind of at the same time doing the same thing.
That does track really tightly. And I think that, like, at the whole scene where he gets punched out by the big dude for fucking his mom was to show us that reality. That, like, okay, here is Elliot choking himself up against the wall.
Uh-huh.
Here he is across... Now Christian Slater's going across the room. When he gets punched and falls, he doesn't fall by the wall. He falls over by... So that's like it's almost like that's the prestige, right?
Yeah.
Like, now go back and watch all these scenes and see how, like, just because someone's body is here and the other person's here, like, it all still lines up. That stuff, unsurprisingly, like, it'd be real amateur hour if you could go back and see, like, what the fuck? He's like looking at Mr. Robot and
But that second watch is pretty rewarding just from that perspective alone.
Yeah, definitely. Because I don't think anybody was like prepared for that to be happening
in
the first
one.
Three or four episodes. So like, but there's still a lot of that going on.
Yeah.
It's nice to go rewatch. I'm itching to talk about this Tyrell Willett guy.
Do it. Let's talk about him.
Okay. So my first season, I thought this guy was terrible. Like, this guy is every fucking James Bond villain, every fucking sleazy financial guy, every Christian Bale from American Psycho rolled up in one character with a fucking batshit insane wife to match.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't, like, seriously, seriously, he fires dudes just to twirl his mustache. He beats up homeless people just to fucking get his rocks off. He engages in BDSM sex with his pregnant wife, which, you know, least freaky thing he does. He strangles a woman that he's in the middle of seducing, and then he bought this. I mean, I feel like there's no, there, I feel like there's no way that he's relatable, and he's, but he's also shown as like the equal to Elliot in a lot of ways. And I still feel a lot of this, that he's a terrible, bad character. He's got nothing that feels like anything remotely human. He's just like an alien creature. But I started coming around in the second watch that he literally is Elliot. Not literally, because I'm about to, suggest that later in the podcast.
That as well, sure.
But he is Elliot. If Elliot were to put on a suit and try to embody the ideals that society says, where you accumulate wealth, you marry a beautiful woman. Yeah.
If he's trying to play that game perfectly.
You know, the way he wears his mask and the way he awkwardly interacts with people, it's like, this is the way I'm supposed to act. And like that, like,
he's
Elliot
the counterpoint.
Would be Tyrell if he tried that hard to wear the mask.
Yeah.
He would be that crazy. I don't think it's easy to suggest that, okay, there's not that much daylight between those two characters. It's just their circumstances. But even then, like, I still feel like, okay, so Tyrell's this weird changeling guy. He's this, you know, American Psycho.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you find a wife that, like, I almost felt like it would have been a stronger arc if his wife was unaware of how insane he was, instead of, like, subtly encouraging and rooting him on. Like, you know, that then, like, it would be kind of a, but then, I don't know, maybe that, maybe it's interesting to have a female that is maybe perhaps crazier than the fucking craziest antagonist I've ever seen.
I think she is. Yeah, she's the one pulling the strings on his life, for the most part. Like, I think he's already prone to wanting power, to wanting success.
Yeah.
And to wanting to live this perfect life, but she's the one pushing him in the psychosis direction, like putting all the pressure on him. You know, not all the pressure. I'm not going to say that. He's also doing it to himself, but
in a weird way, this is very much like Unbreakable, where you're seeing the beginnings of a superhero and a supervillain.
Okay.
Like Tyrell Wellick at the end, he's no longer on the corporate track, and season two trailers make it clear that he is wanted in connection with this F Society attack.
Uh-huh.
So he's never going to be in the boardroom. Like, he's now going to be a full-on Morpheus-type Matrix supervillain with Mr. Robot, I suppose, as the good guy in the equation. But that's debatable.
Yeah, it is debatable. I think that the thing that's interesting to me is how he is kind of a counterpoint to Elliot, kind of from the inside of this, right? Like, he thinks he can do this perfect life and that there's, like, all this extreme value in society. Like, he's not on F Society's radar, or F Society isn't on his radar until he gets fired. And then, like, all those things that he's been saying about how puny people are driven by their weak human desires, like petty revenge and things like that. Well, that's exactly what happens to him. At the end, he only gets involved with F Society out of a sense of revenge. Like, this Evil Corp, the spurning from Evil Corp, dominates his psyche to the point where the only thing he can do is get involved with this revenge plot.
I don't know that it was revenge. I thought it was more of like, well, this avenue for being this rich, powerful individual is closed off to me. I'm now going to go the other way.
Right, but I mean, that he doesn't gain power or anything by doing that.
I mean, arguably, the F Society is one of the most powerful groups in the world at the end of season one.
But it's momentary power, right? Like, they're not running things. They just fucked everything up.
Right.
So, like, yeah, you have that moment of power where you're able to bring down the system. But
what I'm saying is, like, I think he's positioning himself to be a legit James Bond villain, like Volcano Lair.
But I mean, he's working
the power
actively
behind multinational companies like that. It would be interesting.
Maybe so. But my revenge point is, he's working actively to stop F Society until he's found out and, yeah. and this murder thing happens and he gets fired. And then he's like, well, here's my recourse. Here's my revenge.
That read to me less revenge and more plan B. Because the other thing is the post-credit sequence in the show that so there is some kind of connection between Evil Corp and the shadowy world of hackers.
Right.
Like maybe that the Dark Army is the power behind. And that, and I don't know that Tyrell set out to do this knowingly, but it would be ironic if he ends up running Evil Corp as some kind of hacker.
Right.
You know, as I don't even, this is where like stuff starts getting silly.
Yeah, it's interesting because they constantly talk about the Dark Army and how their motivations are not,
sure.
you know, political. They're not motivated by money or the same things that Elliot is motivated by.
Bullshit. It's power, politics, money.
Well, sex, love, like revenge. There are plenty of things that motivate people. It's just we don't know what their actual motivation is. They have a motivation, certainly, and it's rooted in the human psyche, but what is it?
Well, and White Rose is even this like paradox because she's obviously this transsexual person, but in the end, like, was this to fit into a male-dominated society? Presenting as a man, was that an attempt to fit in? Is that her real persona? And
or is
the
it just
White
a disguise?
Rose persona is the disguise? Like, who the fuck knows?
Who
like
knows?
Everybody, and like, you know, they play around with the masks idea and the anonymous deal, which that's somewhat annoying to me. The fact, like, why didn't they just go full on anonymous? Just because would Anonymous sue them?
They did. They essentially did, right?
But the mask is goofy. Like, Guy Fawkes, way more menacing in a video than evil Monopoly guy.
I guess.
All right? Like, this guy looks like he wants me to buy Big Macs so I can get Boardwalk and Park Place and win $1 million. He doesn't look like he wants to set me free.
Okay. I mean, the aesthetic of the mask is the least interesting thing, I guess, for me to talk about when it comes to...
Well, guess what's the most interesting now? Every podcast, we're going to have at least 15 minutes of Mask Talk.
God. You know? I quit.
Trying to set you free, Jim.
But so that is one of the most interesting things about season one, is that it is kind of bigger than Elliot. And, like, the discussion, you know, when it comes down to Elliot and Tyrell, like, those are two people who are suffering from psychosis, right? And like these people, like that exploration of psychosis, and I think like the exploration of the human psyche and what drives people and when that gets fragmented and there's like really horrific events that happen to them, I think that's going to be an interesting part of seasons going forward.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I want to explore that more than just like, oh, I've got this split personality, my father's actually dead sort of stuff. Like, how does that drive your motivations? How do you combat that? Like, when you realize that you're insane,
and the part of you wants
what drives your actions?
Yeah, and the part of you wants something, the other part doesn't, which is the real you.
Right.
What do you really want?
I'm looking for more exploration of that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not looking for answers, I guess.
Sure.
But just, like, play with that idea.
Yeah, like, you know, in the Leftovers way. Like, they don't, there's not answers. It's more revealed truths and I don't know, like, you either get the fact that character development is as satisfying as the mechanics of a plot or you don't.
Yeah,
and like, I can't explain it, like, you know.
Sure.
But I agree with you, that stuff can be equally satisfying. I don't know, like, I don't know if they can sustain a like caper of the season, whereas if and also I don't know that they need to. I mean, this is a huge, like, I almost think they undersold, like, how much fucking chaos there'd be if for 3 days people couldn't get money out of an ATM, or their loans were gone, or their 401k is gone. Like, you've got, what do the people do that are relying on that income? Like, you're 55, you saved up your whole life, you early retired, and now your money's gone.
Yeah.
Like, that is going
to... The unintended consequences, I think, of these actions are super interesting in season two.
And I wonder if that's going to be, like, if you are all jizzed up about... Jizzed up, too. If you're all jizzed up, just popping off everywhere about the idea of anarchy, like, this is what anarchy would look like. And I just feel like that, man, I felt like the kind of nice, orderly mobs and gentle chaos that we saw 3 days after the event would... No, like, I don't
but
know.
I feel like
New York
just,
would be on fire.
I think that's just the tip of the iceberg. I think, like season two is really going to dig into the consequences of deleting everyone's debt and destroying essentially the financial system that we've put in place over the last 100 years.
Or, like, are we
thousands of years? You know, like, yeah, this has been in the making so long.
Yeah,
to destroy it in an instant is chaos, pure chaos.
It's like anytime someone starts saying, like, you know, what does money even mean? It's just paper, and it's like the value does, you know, it's not. I'm like, look,
right?
You are so fucking ignorant of economic history. You just really need to stop talking and crack a book, any book.
Sure,
go find a book in economics.
I'm in that boat, but I'm not so naive that I think I have the answer, and I think that this would be a good solution to break the system overnight.
Yeah. I just want the thing that I got in the season two trailers that might bug me is that I didn't get the overwhelming sensation that the world as we know it has stopped functioning. It seems like it's business as usual. There's cops and FBI agents and all that. And
right.
Are they working without salary? Are they getting paid? Like, did the government get hacked too? Is the Treasury Department? Like, I don't know.
What happens when people's pantries run dry?
Right.
What happens when...
Mad fucking Max is what happens.
Absolutely. And in a city as big as New York, that...
Especially since, like, this dangerous. Is an apocalyptic situation without the attending, like, 90% wiping out of the population.
Exactly.
Where, like, you've got just as many mouths to feed and none of the, like, you know, say what you will about modern economic policy and global finance and whatnot, but it does put food on the table for the majority of people.
Uh-huh.
You know? And you're essentially taking all the first world and giving them third world problems. Like, what are you going to eat?
Right. And the
catch
bandages.
Catch a chicken in New York City?
Right.
You're gonna
you can go to everyone and
for
say.
Forage for turnips in Central Park?
Sure.
What are you doing, man?
Right. So you need some kind of global cooperation from people to say, let's keep this system going. Like, do the things you've been continuing to do, except let's do it without money.
Right.
That ain't going to happen.
And like,
it just isn't going to happen.
Yeah, you're a wage slave at your corporate IT job. Great. Walk out. Now what, the firemen, the policemen, and the nurses and the doctors, what are they doing? Like, it's I worry that they're not going to go far enough, and it's going to be essentially...
But I hope that they will.
It's going to be essentially a remixed Obama speech and some CNN tickers, but every life is kind of going on, you know, as normal.
Right.
But I don't know.
And that might happen for
a
couple of days, but once payday comes around, that's the real...
But that's the thing. Like, it's not just payday. I mean, how much cash do you have on you?
Zero. Like, oh, not that, zero.
I have like $23 in my pocket right now. Right. If my bank account was zapped, fuck payday. What am I doing today?
Yeah.
I've got...
How am I going to get my burritos?
Food in my fridge. Yeah, exactly. I got a couple days of my food in my fridge. Then
same
what?
Same here.
Then what?
That's what I mean. Like, pantries run dry. People start rioting in the streets, start killing each
and
other
for
food.
It's not like 15% unemployment, which is already catastrophic. It's like everyone at
it's
the 100%. Same time.
Yeah.
Like, you go to your neighbor, hey, can I borrow? No, you can't. My last cup of sugar ran out last night.
So that's the thing that I'm super excited about for season two, if they really explore that idea.
Well, so now let's talk about my fears.
Okay.
Because the last time I heard a guy say... You know what? I had this story that I was writing and in my notepad, and I've realized it's a three-arc part, and I took the first arc, and I exploded and blah, blah. It was George Lucas talking about Star Wars.
Oh, God.
I'm like, you know what I'm saying? Like, this, it's eerily, the way this guy talks about the plot of Mr. Robot is eerily similar to the chest beating that Lucas did post-Return of the Jedi, Phantom bullshit. And that, so he could actually deliver on these promises, which would be incredible.
Yeah.
Or he shot his wad and he's desperately trying to come up with the second act that he doesn't really have.
Okay.
And I mean, I feel like we'll know within three episodes whether that fear is true. But like,
it's a legitimate fear.
Yeah. Cause I was the guy, you know, I was one of the ones saying that, boy, it felt like the third act of the first season kind of fell off.
Mm-hmm.
And he then says, well, this is not even act one. This is the prologue of the story that I really want to tell. And I'm like, oh, okay. That has me kind of reaching for my wallet and gun. I don't know. I don't know how to feel about it. Confidence.
Well, I don't have anything that can inform me one way or another. I'm not familiar with Sam as works.
Sure.
As a whole, I don't have any confidence. But then again, I don't have any negative feelings toward him. So... I guess I'm throwing my hands up and say, I'm going to say, let's wait and see.
Right.
Because that's all I can do. I know there's going to be a lot about like the hunt for the hackers in this new season based on the preview that I saw.
Yeah.
You know, Elliot's going to be hunted, whether he's hunted directly by Evil Corp or he's hunted by the government at large. I don't know yet.
Or both.
Or both. Both. Probably both, yeah. Because, you know, the government's certainly going to get in on the hacker hunt.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It could be interesting. It didn't seem to me like, for a show where the global economy has just been upended,
right,
it didn't seem to me like there was a lot of global reach in the preview anyway. Like,
I didn't,
you see the president going, oh, this is a big crisis and we're going to hunt the hackers down, but you don't see any hints that, like, the president's going after China or doing investigations into the Dark Army in particular. Like, I'm sure that's probably in there, right?
Maybe.
That seems like a natural progression.
Yeah.
When something like this happens.
But that's why I think my big problems with the third act were, why did Dark Army get back on? Because he has his meeting with White Rose, and everything, even White Rose was saying, everything you're saying makes me want to get out of this deal worse.
Yeah.
And at the very last part of the conversation, she's like, you've got 50 hours.
Right.
To blah, blah, blah.
He asks the question, and it's like, that makes sense. And then
it's back on. Same thing with Angela. Like, her character went from this social crusader trying to get justice to her father to corporate whore and where's my Prada, bitch.
She had a momentary lapse in ideology.
But
I'll
feel
say
like
that. I don't think she transformed as a character in that Prada
to
moment.
To me, this felt like the writer's deliberate attempts to manipulate a character into the inner highest echelon bowels of E Corp, so Evil Corp, so that she will be useful in season two. And I don't like that.
That
didn't feel organic at all.
Okay, I'm mostly with you there. I don't know that, you know, this guy coming to her and offering her this job made a whole hell of a lot of sense. Although there's hints in the season two stuff that I've seen in interviews with the cast members that, like, this character who's the head of E Corp, Evil Corp,
Price
sees something in Philip Price, yeah.
Okay.
Philip Price. He sees something in Angela. He knows that she's close to the hacker who infiltrated the systems. Like, there's a reason he's keeping her around. I feel like season one doesn't give us a lot of information that maybe would make these things line up a little better, make more sense, like the motivation for Dark Army and White Rose, for instance. Like, the motivation for Philip Price, like,
I'm just saying, for what we know now, those are the big,
I
would say, weaknesses. They could turn into strengths later, but
okay.
And even if he's got plans for her, why the fuck does she decide to get on? I mean, I guess we're supposed
to destroy it from the inside. I mean, she buys into that idea.
I don't know, because I got more like she had this conversation with the guy where he's like, look, you think it's this one thing, but it's more just, you know, I wanted to move on to my lunch basket, and I wanted to go home.
Right.
And I treat my job just like everyone treats you know, the fact that I decide horrifying things doesn't mean, like, I'm sitting there thinking, ha, fucking these people for profit. It's like, it's a job, just like any other unpleasant job.
Which
you
all
do.
Felt very realistic.
And she's like, okay. She had this epiphany where it's like, well, if the world really works this way, my dad's getting ground to nothing. I might as well get in and get mine and protect the people. Then,
okay.
To me, that needed a little bit more room to breathe and develop. Like, I needed a couple more episodes in between. It felt a little Anakin Skywalker. Oh my God! What have I done? I killed Samuel Jackson. Now I guess I'll just, the only recourse is to slaughter infant Jedi. And
yeah, that's not the impression I got from Angela. It was more like she wants to get in and see what she can do to actually change the system that's broken.
So I think I'll try the Prada was just her.
It was her realizing how easy it would be to get into this mindset that these other people in Evil Corp are in.
Huh.
Like, how tempting that is. And she kind of realized how horrifying that is toward the end, where this guy's giving the speech in this big Evil Corp room. To me, it felt like her having a momentary slip up and realizing it and going, oh God, that's what I could become. This is a very dangerous situation for me, but not backing out of the situation.
Right.
Still wanting to try to change things.
Okay. So the other thing I'm wondering about for season two is what is the relationship between Elliot and his therapist? Because the way they left it,
right,
is Elliot confesses to the fact that, like, I connect with people through hacking them, and mm-hmm. I've hacked the shit out of you and everybody else, and you're out of the situation. It's all very horrifying.
Yeah.
And I know you like watching anal porn, so, and then we have to share a room together and make eye contact.
Right. Whether you participate in in your life, I don't know or don't care.
I haven't been able to figure out the hacker webcams. I wasn't actually seeing what you were doing when you were watching it.
Right.
And then she has the meeting with her ex-boyfriend, who turns out to be a scumbag, where he's trying to convince her to, you know, this guy really hurts people and she should turn him in. Is he still going to be seeing her as a therapist? Did she fire him as a client? Like, what?
Good question.
Well, I thought that was an interesting character.
Yeah.
Because it's funny because Elliot never took the therapy seriously, but I couldn't help but thinking, especially the second time through, is like, Jesus, if you would actually open up your mind and let a little of this seep through.
Yeah.
And
I think that might be what's happening, because now he realizes he's crazy and he needs some kind of help.
And I wonder what the overall arc, you know, of this story is going to be. Is the resolution of this story going to be Elliot merging all of his personalities together, getting on some kind of effective therapy and drug combination, and being a happy, well-adjusted individual? Is he going to die as a martyr? Is he going to become a supervillain and embrace his psychoses? I wonder what we're supposed to think, or what are you supposed to be rooting for?
Will he battle against it, and what does a relapse look like? Like,
yeah.
Because obviously something triggered Mr. Robot in the first place, right? And I don't think it happened when his dad died. I think it happened later on, because they talk about, oh, you're going through this again, Elliot? Like, did you forget again? I'm your sister. Like,
it was the loneliness, right? I feel like he gets in a cycle where he's so insane. He tries to fit into society, and doing so alienates him and makes him feel extremely lonely. Uh-huh. And then he starts having these psychotic breaks and starts, you know, hacking people to feel close to them. And he's gotten this kind of cycle of where he goes off his meds, yeah, and goes off the script. And
we catch him at the beginning of a cycle. Yes. I want to see what it
or maybe
looks,
even
what
the
build
like
up
he was
to
at the
another
crest. He was at the high point of one of his cycles where he's highly functioning and he's got
right
a stable set of people in his life that kind of more or less are positive influences, and he's self-medicated himself to where he can get by.
Yeah, I want to see what the build up to another break looks like.
Mm.
To another Mr. Robot incident looks like for him.
Yeah, do you think we'll like go through different epochs like that where he'll
feels like that could be the track, unless he does get some therapy and get some help and starts to get better.
Right. And that brings me back to when I was talking about, you know, not knowing what to think and not knowing who to root for, is I feel like maybe one of the reasons Tyrell is such a whack job and Evil Corp is so over the top. Like, the ethos of this show wants you to think that all companies...
Right.
Like the worst that we've uncovered about corporate America is how they all act behind the scenes. And as a person who's sat in several boardrooms and been in conversations where it's like, oh, wow, we've just found this thing where consumers are getting fucked. And, you know, like, large or small, something the public trust is at issue. I've always seen them, like, in my experience, take the more expensive ethical approach.
Okay.
Now, part of it is because, you know, you just get the making a mistake and coming clean and trying to help your customers and clientele out will never usually destroy the company. Mm-hmm. Whereas covering it up and trying to bury it, if that ever does get out, it will destroy your company. And the nature of whistleblowing, and all you need in a boardroom out of 20 people is like one ethical person and you're fucked.
Okay, sure.
You know. So that's the thing that always bugs me. But the reason they really amp up the evilness of E Corp and Tyrell Willick is so that we will root for F Society, because if it's just F Society against a normal representation of the universe, I feel like I'm rooting for the FBI agents and CIA and the all safes of the world.
So that's the thing. Like, I don't feel like I'm entirely on F Society's side at this point.
And we talked about this yesterday over lunch. Elliot's a bad, like, the one good guy in the show,
Gideon.
Who seems like he's always doing it for the right reasons, Elliot fucks.
He does.
Completely.
Yeah.
Or was that even a thought?
He uses his access at F Society to start this whole thing in motion. I mean,
and Elliot, unlike us, he has perfect knowledge. Like, this guy isn't pretending to be good.
No, he is.
I have
good,
put my hands all the way up inside his tender intimate parts and pronounced him clean. And I'm still going to fuck him.
Right.
Because he has something that I need, and he's in my way.
I guess, if I were to disagree with what you just said, that's the angle I would come at, which is not all corporations in this show are bad. I think there are some black and white sort
of things.
The good
ones are just incompetent.
There are some gray ones. Well, the good ones just get fucked. Like,
yeah.
I don't think the show is trying to say that all corporations are like this. It's trying to say more like our current system is set up to encourage this sort of behavior, and that the system is the broken part, and that the good people get fucked, and the bad people rise to the top, and the power collects at the top, and those sorts of things, which I largely kind of agree with.
So this is The Wire for the white-collar crowd?
Yeah, yeah, I'd say that's a pretty good comparison.
Except for, again, The Wire was all based on real things. Like, they weren't...
Sure.
They were all based on actual cases, because this stuff really happened, where this feels like a fantasy version of...
Yeah. And maybe the hacking part is based on, like, things that really happened.
Sure.
I know the Steel Mountain thing is based on...
Iron Mountain?
You know, something that... Right. There are locations like this, but based on actual hacking events.
The melting the tapes?
Yeah, I don't think it was melting tapes, but it was something very similar.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they got in, and over the course of... they wrote, like, really complex programs to shut down, like, power grids or something. Like,
right.
And really just fuck up infrastructure.
Right.
But I don't know. I don't see anything in this show as really trying to be super black and white.
Mm-hmm.
Except, you know, pieces of it are black and white, but I don't think the show overall is meant to be black and white. Mm-hmm. I think it's meant to be gray.
Yeah. Yeah, I would definitely agree with that.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of what
else.
Do
you have, like, a favorite character? I know you're probably most hated. Your
Tyrell
least favorite character
is
Tyrell. I actually dislike Ollie probably the most.
Who's Ollie?
Angela's boyfriend.
Fuck
that guy all the way up his ass. Oh, man. I hate that dude with a passion. I largely have the same feelings about him that Elliot does. And then once you find out that he's a cheater and just a scoundrel, like, fuck that
guy. That's the other problem is, like, Elliot's
and
always...
good for you, Angela.
Elliot's always right. Like, his instincts are always right.
They do seem to be, yeah.
Except for, I guess, he fucked up Shyla. That was where his instincts were wrong.
Right, yeah.
But,
Do you have, like, a favorite character from season
one? Got beat up. He's the real hero.
He's
the real hero of the story.
Took a beating.
Favorite character? Like, I guess I want to say Elliot, because everybody else...
Sure, it's easy
it's
to
so
say
weird
that, yeah.
Because you... Other than those scenes we got of, like, Angela and Darlene just hanging out at ballet class or whatever they were doing, most everything is seen through the lens of Elliot, and everyone looks pretty one-dimensional and, like, a facade of themselves.
Yeah.
Because that's how he sees them. He doesn't, like, it's really weird brain-in-the-vat way of looking at it. Like, almost like all these, he treats all these people as if they are simulants or simulations.
He does. Like, it's really hard for me to say, like, man, Elliot does some real shitty things. Like, when he tears down Bill when he's trying to infiltrate Steel Mountain, like, get to level 2 or whatever, and he just says, if you really look inside yourself, you know you're useless and no one loves you. And, like,
he welcomed
him. Eviscerates this poor fool. And, you know, maybe the things he's saying are true, maybe they aren't, but god damn. Like, he's the bad guy in that moment. Elliot for sure is.
Yes.
I think my favorite character, and this is a little tongue-in-cheek, but whatever, is Lloyd. Lloyd, who's like he has some of the best lines in the series, in season one.
Is Lloyd? Is he one of the other
he's one of the other guys at AllSafe.
Oh,
he's
the
buzz cut Chinese guy.
Yeah.
He's really funny.
Okay. Because, like, I don't know any of the other F Society people.
Oh, right.
Like, it's like the Muslim one, the chubby one, the marijuana weaponized wheat guy. Like, I don't know their names or they have a good handle on that yet.
Same here. I don't know them.
That's typical of a Bald Move podcast. We go in saying, what's as fuck with the funny hair, and by third or fourth episode, we'll have their names down. But
yeah, we'll get them. But yeah, that's about all I wanted to say.
I want to talk about some of the because the crazy conspiracy theories that I started reading into when I looked into, because I, you know, last year I watched it and I talked with it amongst the Bald Move fans, and I think I might even, did we do a podcast on it? Like a
I think we did a short thing on Bald Move TV. Yeah, after we had seen it.
And I feel like I talked with Shane Bowman and one of the wrap-up things I did, so I know we get some coverage of it, but I didn't really get into, like, I wasn't on the subreddit every week, and I was watching it much more casually. But there's these, you know, this is the kind of show that encourages this kind of crap. I shouldn't say crap, this fan behavior. Like, okay. You know, this is a True Detective, this is a Breaking Bad, this is everybody's wanting their tinfoil theories. There's a theory that Elliot and Tyrell and Mr. Robot all the same person.
Okay, I don't buy that.
Okay, so here is the main points of evidence is that Elliot, throughout the series, is shown to recoil at other people's touches. He does not recoil from Tyrell's touch. Tyrell tells
Tyrell
Elliot
touches him. When does Tyrell touch him?
During the Iron Mountain or Steel Mountain scenes.
Okay.
He also says we're the same. And also Elliot's subconscious during the, you know, morphine vision saying that I was only born a month ago. The other thing is that, you know, Tyrell is implied to help with the hack, but he disappears for 3 days at the same time that Mr. Robot blacks out for 3 days and he wakes up in Tyrell's car.
Okay, let me throw this out there to just quash this, to nip this in the bud. So you're saying that if this theory
were
true,
is saying, Jim, the internet I'm is saying, just passing right. information.
Okay, if this theory were true, he would have to have two jobs, right? He would have to be an employee at Evil Corp because he interacts with tons of people at Evil Corp. He gets fired, he fires people, very high level. And he would also have to be an employee at AllSafe. There is no way around that. Those two jobs.
True.
At one point,
when Tyrell's coming through to, like, tour the facility? Is that what
right.
you're talking about?
So there's 2 points then, I guess. So at the beginning, you know, he interacts with him and, you know, he's in that board meeting. I don't know exactly how the interactions go, but I'm going to say here's a showstopper for that theory. He at the end, when he's looking for Tyrell, he walks into Evil Corp and he goes up to Tyrell's assistant. Okay. And he says, where is Tyrell? She wouldn't be able to say, he's fired, go away.
Right.
If they were the same person.
That's a good point.
She would say, what the fuck are you talking about? You're standing right here.
Yeah, that's a good point. The other
unless, I mean, they're really leaning into this unreliable narrator thing and he never actually went there and, like,
well, I mean, they
everything's
could,
up
they
in the
could
air.
Do that, and I think that's what...
They could, but they'd have to show
and
that, me that.
That's one of those theories where essentially every problem with it, as I could tell, is essentially an appeal to unreliable narrator. But there's one thing that I do... Tyrell's wife acts very Helena Bonham Carter-ish when he confronts her about the whereabouts of Tyrell.
Oh, right. He does that, too.
Yeah, and she speaks to him in Danish after speaking to him in English as if she assumed he would understand that and says, if you've done anything to him, I'll kill you. Like, it's very like, you know, there's a couple scenes in Fight Club where Helena Bonham Carter is dealing with Ed Norton and it's everything feels off, like, for what it is. And then you realize, oh, well, he's also Tyler Durden. This makes sense.
Okay.
I got a bit – that's the biggest mystery, the why she now maybe it's because Elliot and him were palling around these 3 days and she knew that they were together and doing this scheme, but she kind of I don't know, it's so weird.
Yeah,
also I remember when she broke her own water to get the cops away, that I thought that it was understood that she had sacrificed her baby. Like, whoa, Jesus, this is great. But then the baby's fine. Like, you know, bloody fork and self-induced labor with a fondue skewer and everything's going to be fine. So this leads into the other... I can't even say this is a straight face. I'm just kind of warding off emails.
Okay.
The time-traveling Elliot theory.
What the fuck
is this? That Elliot
is
the son of Tyrell Wellick and Joanna, I think, Wellick or whatever her name is. That baby born is actually Elliot, and he is somehow mentally traveling back and forth in the time.
Is there any support for that, like evidentiary type stuff.
And that, well, I mean, they retcon that when he's talking to the audience, he's actually talking to his future self.
When is he there says, like, any hello, support friend. For that, like evidentiary type stuff?
I don't know. Like the no, not really.
Okay.
Not really.
This is just pure speculation, pure fan theory.
The one theory that could be a nod to this is there's a picture of him and his father dressed up as Marty and Doc Brown in one of the photos.
Right. Right. Okay.
So, I mean...
But there's also, like, the reference that Back to the Future is his favorite... Back to the Future 2 is his favorite movie.
Exactly. So... And also White Rose says that you hack people because, you know, that he's trying on different personas to try to change his personal history.
I'll say I don't think that's the story they're trying to tell.
I don't think so either. It's and again, there's not. This is a theory that's long on supposition and assumptions that advance the theory and make a certain kind of sense. And it's like, oh wow, mind blowing, but very short on actual evidence other than just the
thematic stuff.
Yeah.
Back to the Future's mentioned. Well, okay, fine.
Right.
I mean. There are plenty of other things that could have been mentioned there. And would you run with other theories?
Yeah. The other thing is, like, not really a conspiracy theory, but a lot of people trying to figure out who White Rose is and what their relationship is to E-Corp.
Sure.
What the relationship is to F Society and Dark Army, and, you know, who is the actual big bad? Is E-Corp the big bad, or is Dark Army the big bad? And all that stuff is... part of that. There's also the theory of
if Inception was the movie that had been mentioned, would you go with dream theories?
It worked just as well, right?
Right. That's what I mean. Like, there's nothing in and of itself to say it's time travel.
It'd be funny to see Elliot and his dad dressed up as Tom Hardy and Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah,
just generic dudes in the tux.
How would you even know?
Yeah. The other thing is, like, I thought it was interesting. Part of the fact that, like, this show, I'd forgotten that the Ashton Madison hack happened months after the show, but the show references it.
Right.
And also, famously, the season finale of this show got delayed because of, a gun violence incident, which that's looking less clairvoyant, almost like betting black and roulette.
It's going to come up.
There's so much, we're in this kind of wave of gun violence right now that, it's
does seem prescient in a weird sort of way, but almost like inevitably so, you said.
The Ashton Madison, that feels like, of course somebody's going to hack that and release data and embarrass people, but fact that it went down, in fact, when I was watching it, I'm like, they really went hot to the press with the Ashley Madison thing and worked that into the diet. And then when I was reading some postseason reviews, I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah, it happened. It aired before that happened.
So with that in mind, any predictions for prescient things that's going to happen? Should we start making stock market bets based on...
Yeah, let's watch the episodes and let's...
Because every once in a while, I'll notice...
If there's any coli scare in one of their fast food chains.
Like, when they're doing, the montages of the financial, you'll see seas of red of everything going down, but there'll always be one company that's, green.
Oh, that's right.
You need to bet on that company.
Bet on green.
Always bet green. Bet on green.
That's the other interesting thing is they modeled some of these information leaks and stuff after the Sony hacks, I guess. It was the information that they got from this Steel Mountain hack, they were releasing once a week like the Sony hacks happened.
Yeah.
And they were threatening to release more and all that kind of stuff if demands weren't met. Yeah, it definitely, they do the hacking stuff really well, and in some cases so well that it happens before the hacks even happen in the real world.
Yeah. That is kind of
I'm good.
Where I'm at with Mr. Robot for setting up for season two. If you haven't listened to a Bald Move podcast before, you'll come to appreciate that feedback is a big part of it, and you can send feedback into Robot.
Robot, okay.
Robot at baldmove.com. Yeah, I thought about Mr., but then, people might put a period there. Yeah. Maybe spell out Mr., and, it's just Robot. Send it to robot@baldmove.com, and you can also discuss it. We'll have a forum set up for Mr. Robot on forums.baldmove.com.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two primary ways. The first is
Here's the other big thing that you could do for us, since this is a new show. go to iTunes and leave us a review if you enjoyed the show. Like,
yeah,
that'll help us get into New and Noteworthy and get people, more people listening to the show. And I honestly couldn't tell you what the show is going to do.
Yeah,
it could be one of our big losers. It could be a big hit. I honestly don't know. So that will help out tremendously if you can just go leave a 5-star review on iTunes.
Rate and review this.
Yes.
So yeah, we'll be back. You know, traditionally when a show premieres on an evening, we're back 2 days afterwards to give us time to research and do all that kind of collection work.
Watch it a time or two more.
Yeah, all the stuff that goes into a podcast. So the premiere is July 13th of season 2. It's a double episode premiere, Unmasked Part 1 and Part 2. So we'll have 2 hours of coverage to get through by Friday.
Quick prediction: who opened the Elliot's door at the end? Tyrell Wellick. That's what I'm going to say.
Okay, that's a pretty good prediction.
Okay,
I was going to go with White Rose.
White Rose. Okay. Also,
although that's too nah, because that she said
too much White Rose.
She said you'll never see me again. If literally she sees him at the end of this season, that will feel weird, anticlimactic.
Right. You're going with the pronoun she. I don't know which pronoun to go with.
You're
because,
right.
Because like at the end. It's a he.
Yes.
It might be a he. It might be a she. I don't really know.
Problematic referring to the person as an it, but yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, you're right, because I don't know whether they are a man presenting as woman, a woman presenting as a man crossed. Like, so, we don't know enough about the character.
Apologies for not getting that right.
But we don't
for
I don't
what
know
it eventually turns out to be, but
I don't know there's enough information to definitively determine what this person.
Sure. So we'll use it interchangeably. Whatever.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah, we'll be back with a double episode next Friday. Talk to you then.